This is Brewers Extra Innings in the playoffs. Now live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee. Here's your host, Bob Brainerd.
All right, so we're going to play four, at least four, in the best of five to try to move on to the National League Championship Series. That's all right. Chicago Cubs did what they had to do to stay alive. They beat the Brewers in Game 3 at Wrigley Field. Final score was 4-3. Hi, this is Bob Brainerd, in for Dom, who's out on the West Coast. He is following the Dodgers and Phillies game out there on Turner, and they are taking the field. Dodgers are looking to sweep that series in three straight. So in the meantime, we're going to chat about Game 3 back here at home. Jerry Augustine, former Brewer Chucker, is in studio with me here. And Augie, it was, you actually said when we were walking in the building here and the Brewers kept chipping away, typical Brewer baseball, right? After falling in that 4-1 hole in the first inning, you had a feeling it was going to just get them over the hurdle there and win this one 5-4. But not to be, give the Cubs credit though, because after getting the four runs, they didn't score again. So we'll give the Brewers bullpen credit and we'll talk about that. But also the Cubs, they didn't rest on their laurels in that first inning. The pitchers for Chicago went out and did the job, and that's why they were just one better.
Well, scoring the four runs in the first inning, that really set the tone for the game. And, you know, I think what was so important there is getting the four runs. The wild pitch proved to be the winning run of the ball game when Sonson's up there and they were able to score the fourth run. But I think with Taillon coming in the game, being able to neutralize Yelly a little bit and Contreras and Chirio. I think that's what his goal was. He did that. He got in there, got his four innings in, and he did give up the two runs. But I think that's what he wanted to do, is neutralize those guys. And he did the job that the Cubs wanted him to do.
Yeah, it was bend but don't break for
that's
the
right.
Cubs, for him and the rest of the Chicago. The guys that came in, and we'll run through all the scoring once again for you, but, you know, like the Bowers home run was a solo shot. So, again, you know, the Cubs avoided the big inning. It was all single tallies along the way. So, again, it was their mentality, bend but don't break, whatever it takes when you're down 2-0.
It was, you know, it's so interesting because we go into the playoffs, and the one thing we always say is your starting pitching is very important. If you got that one class guy that can go out and give you five or six shutout innings or keep the game within in reach, you're going to be doing okay. And it really turns to the bullpens. And this is a game, today was a game of bullpens.
Yeah.
And it was both bullpens had to go out and really pitch very well. And I thought both bullpens did just that. When you look at what the Brewers did with 8 1/3 innings, giving up just five hits, giving up no runs, that was spectacular. And the guys, the way Murph had it set up, having the guys come in, we saw guys coming in the game, like Mears was the closer for the starter. He's been that all year early in the ball game, and then having Quintana come in and just didn't have his great stuff, but he battled, and he's battle-tested. He knows how to pitch in Chicago. I thought he did a great job for three innings. But then I was really impressed of the guy who was Chad Patrick. Came in and he gave 1 2/3 of just really, in tough situations, made some really good pitches. So when you create that situation, now you still got your guys, Uribe in the mound that hasn't pitched that much along with the McGill. Boy, now it sets you up pretty good for tomorrow.
All right, let's rewind. You talked about starting pitching, how important it is in playoff baseball. And Quinn Priester got the baseball. We all know, you know, he was warming up in the bullpen. That was all by design. It was a decoy in Game 2 back in Milwaukee. So he was going to get the baseball here in Game 3 at Wrigley. That was the plan all along. It didn't go well for Quinn, and it looked Augie, and we'll hear from Pat Murphy as well, and I think he acknowledged too. I think just even watching him, his body language and how he was pitching, trying to command the zone, wasn't able to command it. Only got a third of an inning out of him, and threw 39 pitches. That right there tells you he just was not comfortable from the get-go. Maybe some nerves, and again, maybe just not getting in his comfort zone from the get-go, and that can be problematic.
Well, the comfort zone, I think, is a huge thing you talk about. I think there's two things why they made the decision to allow him to go the third game. It's a really great story for him being Chicago-type guy and coming back to Wrigley. But I think even more important for why they changed it, I think they wanted to go some kind of right, and that second game give him something different. When they lost Woody, it changed their whole identity of what they were going to do games 1 and 2. But Priester, if you remember Priester early in the season when he first came up, He really struggled the first one and two innings. And what was it? It was usually on control, the ability to command the strike zone. And as he got along the season, when he found that breaking ball, he found his little cutter and he found that the breaking ball, the curveball, and the changeup. Wow, now he had the whole realm of his whole pitching pitches that he has, and he was able to command them for strikes, and he always had that sinking fastball. Today, he just didn't have any of it. He couldn't find it, and he was struggling to get it. You could tell out there that he was really perplexed because he just couldn't command any pitch where he wanted to. There wasn't one part of his game that either the cutter, the breaking ball, or even the good sinking fastball that he usually has, he couldn't command that. It was outside the zone. A lot of times that has to be maybe you're just trying to rush a little bit. You're thinking to be too fine, and I think that's what he was today. Today was a good – it was okay. Like Murph said when he walked out, he pat him up. He said, don't get down. We're going to need you, and they will need him as they go on in the playoffs. So it's just a matter of them passing it up, forgetting about it, and coming back at his next start.
I think your point, Augie, of the fact that early on when he was brought up that he did struggle in the early innings. And I think that's why everybody in the ballpark back at American Family Field thought, okay, Ashby's getting the ball. He's going to be the opener, right? He's going to start, give us a couple, two, three innings if you can. And then the plan, and there's Priester warming up. Okay, this is why, because he doesn't have to struggle out of the gate. If Ashby can just kind of set the tone, right, then Priester comes in. But that wasn't the plan.
That's interesting.
It was interesting, afterwards saying, no, that was a decoy, and that, we have bigger, grandiose plans. Nevertheless, they did, and Matthew Boyd of the Cubs knows exactly what it's like to go out there like he did in game one, and he just couldn't find it.
That's right.
He went two-thirds of an inning, and then he was out of it. So Priester had the same issues in game three. But yes, I think you have to commend the Brewers and that pitching staff for not getting down and saying, we're down four, 4-1 in the first inning.
Yeah.
This is not meant to be. The bullpen held their ground after that first inning and didn't allow a run. So yeah, bend but don't break. Quintana, you talked about him. Really good, Augie, because he was in bend but don't break mode either, and he was able to keep the big inning at bay, kept it tamped down.
He stayed. There's a difference when you talk about Priester and Quintana. We'll start that. I really believe that when Ashby started that game in game two, that if the Brewers would have been up, if the Brewers were up by one or two runs at that in that stage, I think Priester comes in the ball game. I think that they were going to piggyback because that worked so well earlier this season. That could have been part of the plan, but it wasn't working out the way he wanted. So they filtered it back a little bit, and they got Mizorowski in the game. He did such a great job. But when you're talking about Quintana, there's a difference. Priester was in the game and just couldn't find himself today, and that happens. Every pitcher goes through that at one time or another. But today was just one of those days, being a young pitcher and couldn't get anything to go, couldn't get a sinker to go on the outside part of plate or inside part of plate, wasn't throwing his breaking ball for strikes. He struggled. But Quintana was the same way. Quintana's the kind of guy that dominates down and away, pitches up and in and gets you out. That's what he does. He hits a cutter up and away, goes a fastball up and in, but his strength is down and away. At first, he didn't have it, but he stayed with it. He didn't give into it, and all of a sudden, he found it. And then after that, he was pretty good the second, third inning. He was much better with location, getting ahead of hitters, and he did a really good job by keeping the Brewers in the game.
Yeah, he did, and the rest of the pen did, and they were just hoping that the offense could chip away, and somebody could come up with the big hit, the multi-run inning. That didn't happen. Again, they were all single-digit innings, so the Cubs were able to sweat it out and get the victory in Game 3 to force a Game 4. When we come back on Brewers Extra Innings, lots more to talk about, including who might pitch in Game 4. Ooh, the mystery continues. Matt Yeazel bringing the bump back music. Everything will be all right. Game 4, it's more baseball, right? And understand, Milwaukee, it's playoff time. Just like the crew brings the energy on the field, Fifth Third Bank brings it to your business. With local expertise and 15 years in Milwaukee, we'll help you score your next big win. Fifth Third Bank, National Association member, FDIC. I'm Bob Brainerd, reading the sponsor reads that are in front of me. Jerry Augustine, former Brewer pitcher, is on his phone. Who are you texting now?
I'm texting my son. It's his anniversary.
Oh, happy anniversary.
Yeah. Matt and Daniela, they live in New York.
Okay.
It's their anniversary. I spoke at their wedding, And the wedding was in Mexico at Guadalajara. So I gave a speech at the wedding, and I said it in Spanish, and it came out.
You did?
Yeah, and everybody understood. The thing is, everybody understood it, and he was just saying, Dad, we just listened to it. It was outstanding. So I'm.
Where did you learn Spanish?
I'm bilingual now.
Come on.
No, I actually wrote it up, and one of Daniela's brothers came on the phone with me. I wrote it, and we talked through it, and he taught us. I wrote all the Spanish down, and I just memorized it from there.
I was going to say, did you even have Spanish class in Kewaunee High School?
300 people at the wedding, and I got up front and I spoke.
Look at you.
English and Spanish.
Look at you.
I'm bilingual now.
If you say so.
Thank you for letting me say that, though.
No. Happy anniversary to them. It is playoff time. Earlier today, the Detroit Tigers stayed alive. They beat the Mariners 9-3 after falling behind 3-0. So that series goes back to Seattle for the Game 5 decider right there. Phillies and Dodgers are underway, top of the first, no score. Phillies got to win to keep that series alive. If the Dodgers win, then they're in the National League Championship Series. And the Blue Jays just scored again. They lead the Yankees in the Bronx 4-1, top of the seventh inning. So you are all caught up. Milwaukee falls to the Cubs 4-3. After the game, former Brewer manager, what was his name again? Craig Counsell of the Cubs talked about getting the win to keep his club alive.
We haven't really played with a lead the entire offseason. I guess game three against San Diego we did, but we had Priester on the ropes, and we had great at-bats kind of getting to that point. And so finishing an inning is important. Adding on runs is important. Those kind of crooked numbers, super important in the postseason. And sometimes that's the chance you get. And we put up a big number in an inning, and it held up.
Let's go to the back right.
And you used 5 relief pitchers tonight. Are they all available tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to always wait to see how they feel when they come in, but I don't think any of them threw more than 20 pitches. A couple guys went 1+, but nobody with more than 20 pitches, so anticipate being in pretty good shape.
Thank you. Let's go to the back left.
Craig, you were able to force them to use 6 pitchers. How do you anticipate that's going to help you guys tomorrow, where you put them into some uncomfortable positions?
Well, they did a nice, their guys did a nice job. I mean, they got, I think, what they – having – having to take your starter out in the first inning, that's potentially something that really uncomfortable. But their guys did a good job, and they obviously put up 8 scoreless innings after that. So I think they're in fine shape tomorrow. We maybe in game 5 that has some impact. I don't think it has an impact tomorrow.
Take 2 more up in the front on the right side.
Craig, between last Thursday, game 3, and then tonight, how have you seen your team handle the mental and emotional component of the brink of elimination?
Well, I mean, this is it's fun and stressful in the same sentence and the same light, and I think you feel both emotions a lot. But you're planning to play tomorrow, and that can't help but give you something else, right? It has to. And I thought we played with that urgency, especially in the first. We just did a great job in the first inning. We had really good at-bats. I thought, the Michael Homer, yes, great. Nico getting on base right away again, like, it's just, it's not going to be a one-run inning. You're going to have a tough inning again. And I thought, we did that really, really well. And it makes a difference. Every run is so hard to come by. And so we put together that really beautiful inning, and you have to play like that. You kind of pull out all the stops, and you, if that gives you an advantage, you try to take advantage. You try to use it as much as you can.
Megan?
I was just curious, the pop-up in the first inning, that foul, it looked like you were chatting with the ump, just were you looking for clarification?
Yeah. I mean, Michael just clearly just lost it. He had no idea where the ball was. And then, the wind put the ball in a place that was like just no man's land for everybody. Nico and Dansby went after it, but the ump's got it right. It was, you have to have a player under like that that's going to catch it to call infield fly, and we never had a player really close to catching it. So right call. I was hoping they made the wrong call. They did not.
Yeah, that was Cubs manager Craig Counsell, by the way. That was weird, Augie, when that happened, and the Brewers were able to get a run out of it. And so you thought, you know what? Maybe this is an omen. You know, the shadows and the sun and Wrigley Field that usually works against the opponents, right? Well, now it got the home team out of the gate. So I'm thinking, you know, maybe the gods are going to shift gears here and go against the home team. But they got out of there with one run. And you heard Craig Counsell talk about the fact that it was huge for them to put those at-bats together because they haven't had an inning like that at all.
No.
You know, game one, right, they sprayed three solo home runs and the Brewers had nine, so it really didn't matter. But they haven't had big innings like that when they made the pitcher uncomfortable and they got a bunch right out of the chute.
You know, it's a different thing. You're playing outdoors. You're playing at Wrigley Field. You got some wind blowing. The wind always makes a change. And, you know, it's so funny because a lot of times on a infield fly situation, as soon as that ball goes up, the umpires are going, their hands go up, say.
Automatically.
And they didn't do it that time. That was, I mean, as far as the umpires going, that was as good of umpiring as you can have, is to make sure that it was catchable. Someone was there. Like Craig said, they did make the right decision on that. They didn't announce it too early. But boy, you get into the confines of Wrigley Field and some of the outdoor stadiums with that wind blowing, it changes everything. And there's one part where it did change a lot.
Yeah, it really did. I mean, even just the corners, you know.
That's right.
Sal Frelick made that catch that could, you know, in the right corner, right field corner. That could have made that four-run inning like six or more.
Very easily.
So easily. So you're making plays like that in a place that you're unfamiliar with. You got a brick wall over there. And so, yeah, there's all these nuances. You know, Wrigley Field, it's different, and it's a home field advantage for a reason because there are a lot of quirky things that can go wrong for the opposing team if you're not ready for all these quirky things coming your way.
Well, and there's a lot of times if you bend down to Wrigley Field and you're watching the game, you look up at the flags up on the top of the scoreboard, and they're blowing a certain direction. But when you get down on the field level, it's swirling. And we've seen that a couple of times.
Mm, like, yeah.
Even the ball that Freddie caught right behind second base, Terang went out like he was going to catch it. And he said, where is it?
Had no idea. Yeah.
And I thought Sal did an excellent job of staying with it because that ball could have dropped in as easily as any ball.
Yeah, no doubt. I want to talk about Jake Bowers because he had a really big ball game. And, of course, he gets plugged in. Andrew Vaughn has been good in the postseason here. Of course, had the big home run the other night. But Bowers goes in because you're trying to take advantage of that lefty bat against the right-handed starter. It worked, Augie. I mean, this was a great move by Murphy because he gets two RBI out of Bowers. Two of the three came from Jake Bowers.
Boy, I tell you, he had that injury and he was out for a little while. And ever since he came back, he just looks so much more relaxed at the plate. He's hitting the ball where it's pitched. That ball he hit tonight, that home run he hit, he smoked that ball the opposite way. A good place to hit it in tonight's ballpark. Got the ball, they hit the gateway, got deep in the count, and he got a base hit up the middle where they scored another run. You know, it's one thing with this ball club when you talk about it and how Murph uses the lineup, and some people say, oh, they got different guys in the lineup here and different guys here, but he really utilizes his team the best way he has the knowledge of. Like, you look at, like, most of the guys that when they put them in the game, you take different guys, like they put Lockridge in the game. Lockridge is a guy who really played well for them, mm-hmm. and he played good against Chicago. So here's a guy where he wanted to give him a chance. He can go to center field. He can run. He can hit his swing and bat. But not only that, he wanted to give him that experience because sometime during the playoffs, that experience is going to help you. Just like he said to Priester, when Priester gave him the ball, he's walking off. No, Murph stopped him and said, hey, don't get down.
Right.
We are going to need you. And that's the way Murph coaches. Your team is there for a reason. Everybody's there for a reason. They'll help in whichever capacity they can, and Murph does a great job at that.
Yeah, Lockridge got the start.
That's right.
And then Collins got an AB,
yep.
And Perkins got an AB later in pinch-hitting roles. And so Lockridge is there. Bowers comes in and contributes. So you're right. He's trying to make it seem like, you know what? We're going to give you a little taste here. Maybe you won't play again for a game or two, but we're going to give you a little taste just so the whole ambiance of the postseason, okay, you got it out of your system, right? So now you've got a taste of it. When we call upon you the next time, whether it's Priester, Collins, Bowers again, Lockridge again. Okay, you guys have already done that. You've already been out in the field. You already know and had that flavor postseason Absolutely. On your tongue.
Yeah, it's big with this ball club because, you know, we're looking at a guy who's your one of your main guy, mainstays in this ball club, and in Jackson Stereo. I tell you what, when you watch him run the bases, he's not going 100%. He's probably looks like he's going 80%.
Yeah.
And it was really kind of neat the other night in game two when he got to second base, he walked over to the third base coach and he says, he was mentioning to him, I'm sure he was saying, hey, I'm not 100%. You got to know that. Right thing to do from a young player who's 21 years old to go over and say, hey, I'm not 100%. Let's make the right judgment if a ball's hitting the gap or wherever it is. And, you look at Jackson Stereo tonight when he even went in second base on the double. He ran well enough to get there.
Yeah, but
that's
close.
What it was. Well enough to get there. Did he run 100%? I think he's still injured a little bit, but he's able to still play the game and keep it under control, and that's so huge for the Brewers.
Yeah, and even a 80%, 75%
that's right.
Jackson Stereo is better than a lot of other guys. You want him in the lineup because he's still got a dangerous stick up there for the Brewers.
He's definitely a spark plug when you look at what he's one of those guys. And, right now the Cubs are saying way we have success against the Brewer ball club is when we can keep Yelly, Contreras, and Chirio, when we can keep them under control, the other guys are going to chip in, and they're good quality ball players. But those three guys, you got to be careful because they really start the big run innings that they do have.
All right. When we come back on Brewers Extra Innings, you heard from Craig Counsell. Pat Murphy gets his turn to talk about the game at Wrigley Field in Chicago. It's coming up next. See, Augie, I gave our producer, Matt Yeazel, I gave him some props, gave him some love for playing the last bump music, and he plays Chicago coming back.
Unbelievable. That's good, though.
Is that by accident, Matty?
Some might say it's timely.
Yeah. I see what you did there. As the temperatures drop, and they have dropped, don't risk a cold shower. Now through October 31st, that's Halloween, Sider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical offering $200 off a new water heater, plus a free 5-year extended labor warranty. Stay cozy. Visit Sider.com today. Bob Brainerd with you in studio after Game 3 down at Wrigley Field in Chicago, where the Cubs win to stay alive 4-3. Joining me here is former Major League pitcher, former Brewer pitcher Jerry Augustine, native of Kewaunee, Wisconsin.
Back
in the day. I've been there.
Born in Green Bay, raised in Kewaunee. Doesn't get any better than that.
We'll talk about the three P's later. after the game, Pat Murphy asked a lot of questions, peppered about this game as the Brewers fall one run shy.
Yeah, I think I think the moment got to him a little bit. I think this is, again, he's not technically a rookie, but it's his first postseason appearance, and had a long layoff. It's at his hometown. Yeah, I feel for him because that's not typically how he's done this year, and it gave them a jump start and was the difference in the game.
The first innings, these first three games from both sides, just how would you describe the way these games have been starting?
Yeah, I mean, both teams come out firing. You know, that's what it's about. You know, they know us. We know them. There's a lot of emotion in the game, and it says something for both teams, really. Tonight, the Cubs got the best of it. Credit goes to them.
Christina.
If you could just speak to the missed opportunities your team had kind of in certain instances in the game.
Yeah, you got to get the big hit sometimes. You know what I mean? We didn't get the big hit. The bunt is an easy run right there. He bunted it a little too hard. He's the best bunter we have. And, it happens.
Almost got out of that first with just one inning. How big was Pete's hit there?
Huge. Huge hit at a huge time. Very clutch. That's what had to happen for us. We had to get that big two-out hit and didn't get it. Oftentimes when you see close games, you look at the runners in scoring position, how successful you were, and we didn't get the big hit. We did hit some balls hard, but credit to them and what they did in the first inning to do just enough to win.
Murph, that Bowers at bat in the eighth, did it seem like the speed with which Keller got right back in that at bat, maybe, I don't know, flipped it on Bowers, or just what did you see from that one from Bowers?
The Bowers at bat?
Yeah.
In the eighth?
Yes.
3-0 count, Was it a 3-0 count?
It was 1-0, and then it went to 1-2, and then threw the fastball.
Yeah, I mean, Bauer's had an incredible game. Without him, we're not in the game. He had the big RBI single and then a big homer. And, I felt good about the at-bat coming in. I think he did, too. I think he was maybe a little shocked by the heaters, how many heaters he got in a row. The sequencing was pretty good. And, you know, credit the catcher and credit the pitcher there for a little bit unconventional heater, you know? It is what it is, but pitching's really good these days, and Bauer's was fantastic tonight. We had some great pitching performances tonight, too. Quintana gave us 3+, and the job Patrick did, the job Anderson did, to give us a chance. I thought those three guys in particular were outstanding, and to shut the Cubs down for 8 innings in their home park, with what an electric environment for them.
Pat, just kind of what for Michael Busch as a hitter, just kind of what challenges does he present to, you know, your pitching staff?
Yeah, between Busch and Suzuki right now, you don't know, and Horner, and, you know, they just got a great lineup. 1 through 9, they got a great lineup. One of the best, really, and that's how the team was built, and they've done a good job, and they're still alive.
That is Brewers manager Pat Murphy. A couple interesting tidbits in there, Augie. First of all, he mentioned that Lockridge is the best bunter on the team, which I didn't know that because, I mean, we've only seen a small sample size of Lockridge at the plate and probably hasn't been in situations where they've even asked him to bunt. But the fact that he did it, if it surprised anybody, it didn't surprise Murphy. So we know it wasn't a mistake. We know that they were calling for it. He just didn't get it down. And that potentially could have been the beginning that Murph was talking about.
One of the things they do in spring training, and Lockridge wasn't here at that time, is they set up a area with a plate, and around it they put different numbers and squares, and you have to go and you have to bunt 10 and you get your score and all that. They do it during the season also. But they don't put the squares there. What they do is they have a bunting contest, and you go out and you bunt. Instead of coming out and taking 10 swings apiece or 5 swings apiece, you take 10 bunts, and they score the bunts how they see appropriate. And I think that's where Murph was relating to, saying, hey, you know what? He has probably been our best bunter because we had practice for that. We do it at home, and he's really been efficient at putting the ball in play. And the reports I got from him, because I know him from before, was that he was a really good all-around hitter, and he's a good bunter. That's probably where Murph came up with that.
Yeah, I would think so. Was it another anniversary call? Do you know how to silence your phone, Augie? This is the second time on Brewers Extra Innings.
I don't know how to
do that. During the post-it, you don't know how to do that?
No, I get bad at
it. I'm a baby boomer, and I know how to do that. Come on, man.
I'm going to work on it. You have to show me after the show.
The boomer will show you how to silence.
There was another thing in what Murph talked about, and was the Bauer situation, the way he was pitched in the late innings.
Yes, because he got it. Because remember, the batter before walked on 4 pitches.
Yeah.
And then the first pitch to Bauer's was a ball. Okay. So it looks like it's going bad. And then what happened? Heater, strikeout.
It's called pitching backwards. Mm-hmm. And when you go, a lot of times when you see different games, you say, well, what can I do to get this turned right or turn around to be better? And I think one thing with Keller, they experienced him in the past playoffs that he came in late in the game and he just lost it. He couldn't command a strike zone. He hit a couple batters and wasn't being able to get it. And what he tried to do at the time, he tried to mix in breaking balls. I watched it. So he tried to mix in breaking balls and fastballs. Here, the behind the plate, Carson Kelly, you got to give him a lot of credit, just like we give Contreras credit, noting that he had trouble with it before. I'm going to stick with the pitch that I know that he can get over the plate more than he can get over a breaking ball, and that's what he did. He stuck with it. It looks like he's pitching backwards. He's pitching, throwing fastballs and curveball counts, but that's not the case. The case in this situation was, I know a guy that throws the ball around 100. I know he throws it with great movement when it's down. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to stick with the pitch that he can be most successful with. And I think that's what Carson Kelly did in that situation.
All right. One other thing, Augie, before we take a timeout, take a break. And this is not something that Murphy talked about, but I want to kick it around with you a little bit. Led off with Christian Yelich tonight. Now, we've seen Jackson Churio in that spot. I get it that, you know, they Taillon is a righty, so you want that lefty up there. But it could have been Terang maybe leading off, and they went, or sometimes you just do Churio and say that's okay, righty against righty, because our guy's 21 years old and he can pop one. But deciding to go with Yelich and then Churio, what were your any thoughts on that?
I think they started that earlier in the season because one of the questions Murph was asked is why are you leading off Yelich, and he says I'm really protecting the 7, 8, 9 hitters. When they get on base, Yelly's there to drive them in. And I think that's classy, and that's a really good reason. And I think the reason they do that is just because of the way Yelly's been swinging the bat. He's been hitting the bat to all fields. He hits the ball on the left field line. He hits it on the right field line. You can't strike him out a lot. He's doubled to start the game, and he's the kind of guy that can do things well. And you look at what he's done in this series. Coming into the game, he was 4-for-8, putting the ball in play and scoring runs. That's where he's been really effective the last month, and he's been very effective for when they started leading him off, especially against a right-hand pitcher. He's getting on base. The team was able to score runs, and that's keeping Terang and Sal, who you usually use in the first spot, in their familiar spot where they have been performing very mm-hmm. well. So rather than mixing well, I think the reason is he puts Yelly there because Yelly can hit anywhere. He's versatile. I'm not saying he doesn't care. He wants to hit wherever he can hit. And right now, that situation, leading off the game, he's a good guy because he can swing the bat, not strike out, and put the ball in play.
No surprise, a lefty sticking up for another lefty. I'm not surprised at all.
Has to be that way.
It has to be. When we come back in Brewers Extra Innings, if you want to hear the highlights from the game in case you missed it, we're going to rewind the tape. We'll play it all back for you. Cubs win it 4-3. Professional athletes like Jerry Augustine back in the day. Trust NeuroSpine Center of Wisconsin, and you can too. From cutting-edge biologic injections to the least invasive surgeries, get a virtual second opinion. Available throughout Wisconsin. Visit nscwi.com. NeuroSpine Center of Wisconsin, your spine health is their passion. Yes, Jerry Augustine, Bob Brainerd with you. Brewers Extra Innings rolls on as the Cubs stay alive to roll on into this series, into a game four tomorrow. Time is TBA, and it's TBA because we have to wait and see what happens on TBS. The Phillies and Dodgers are in the top of the third, no score. Toronto leading in the Bronx over the Yankees, trying to close that series out on the American League side. 4-1 the count there. Blue Jays over the Yankees in the top of the eighth inning. All right, time to rewind the tape as we present highlights from game number 3 in the Windy City.
Ready for this?
Out of here!
This?
Brought it back! Ho, ho, ho!
And this?
It is gone!
Time for tonight's highlights.
Well, Jerry and I were just talking. Christian Yelich plugged into the leadoff spot, and it paid off for the Brewers in the top of the first inning as he had a leadoff double. And moving his way over to third base, it brought to the plate Sal Frelick.
1 out of 8 in the series. Pinched the middle defensively. The pitch is a fly ball to left. Happ behind it. He will make the catch. Tagging, trying to score is Yelich. He will score the game's first run. Sacrifice fly for Sal Frelick. 1-0 Milwaukee.
So, jumping on the Cubs and their starter, Jameson Taillon. But in the bottom of the first, that pesky leadoff hitter for the Cubs tied it.
Here's the pitch. Bush hits a high fly to right. Sal Frelick on the ivy. It's gone. Michael Bush with another home run in the series. His third of the postseason, and we are back to even. One apiece.
And it wasn't going to stay even, unfortunately, for Milwaukee. With a couple guys on, PCA to the plate with a clutch hit.
2-1 pitch. Lined into right of base hit. That'll score at least one. Tucker waved around third. Frelick's throw goes to second. It's 3-1 Chicago, and Pete Crow Armstrong's 2-run single. That may do it for Quinn Priester. Threw him a third straight slider, and he threw it right down the middle.
Indeed, that did it for Quinn Priester. He got one out in the bottom of the first inning through 39 pitches. He struggled. So Nick Mears comes in trying to put the fire out, and not so much.
The pitch is way outside, back to the backstop. Here comes Happ. He'll score. It's 4-1 as Contreras couldn't hang on to the baseball. Happ scores on what will more than likely be a wild pitch by Mears.
Unfortunately, that was the end of the first inning. 4-1, Cubbies in front. All the way to the fourth inning we go, and the Brewers, as they do, begin to chip away.
3-2 pitch. And a liner into center field. That is down for a base hit. Frelick around third. He's going to score. On his way to third is Durbin. He's in there safely. An RBI single off the bat of Jake Bowers. And it's a 4-2 ball game.
And you heard Caleb Durbin goes into third, right? It could have been a big inning for the Brewers, but Lockridge at the plate, best bunter on the team, and it just didn't work out.
Tyone brings home the pitch, and Lockridge bunting. He bunts it up the first baseline, played by Bush, and they're going to have Durbin in a rundown between home and third. Durbin on his way back to third, now heading home. He's going to stay in the rundown long enough, finally falls down and is tagged out by Bush, but both trail runners move up. Bowers all the way to third. Lockridge ends up at second. So they don't get the run home. But Durbin did a good job staying in the rundown. And the Brewers will have second and third with two outs.
But the Brewers stranded those runners at second and third. So 4-2 the score after four innings. We move to the seventh inning. And it's Jake Bowers getting the start at first base, making things happen again.
Andrew Kittredge, first pitch swinging. Jake Bowers to left and deep. Back is Hep at the track. It is gone. Jake Bowers having himself a night here at Wrigley. A solo blast. It is 4-3 Cubs. Bowers has driven in a pair here tonight for the Brewers.
Yeah, the Northsiders were getting a little nervous. And in the eighth, more nerves as the Brewers loaded the bases with an opportunity to tie it or take the lead.
Keller's 1-2 pitch. Struck him out swinging with a fastball, and the Brewers leave the bases loaded in the eighth. Brad Keller walked Durbin and strikes out Bowers to end the threat.
Yeah, Keller really, Augie talked about pitching backward. He really muscled up there to snuff that out and keep it 4-3. And in the ninth inning, the Brewers tried to extend this ball game, but could not.
Keller's opening pitch. Ground ball sharply hit. Horner has it on a dive. Gets up, throws to first, and the Cubs off the mat survive in game three and force a fourth game tomorrow night at Wrigley. 4-3, the final score tonight. Every run scored by the Cubs coming in that first inning.
Yep, they made it hold up. Again, they bend but don't break, and they win it by the count of 4-3. Augie, you know, Keller again. Boy, he came in and he was shaky to start out of the pen.
Yeah, he was.
But he really turned it around, didn't he? And that's exactly what Craig Counsell needed at that point. He just needed somebody who was going to be able to shut the door effectively like he did.
Well, you look at how the Cubs played the last several weeks of the season. They just couldn't find, you know, they got some capable guys that can throw it. They got Kittredge, who's got a really good slider, and he throws the ball pretty well. They got, you know, and they got the other guys that can, besides Keller, that can throw. Palencia, who has been pitching now in that he's probably the stopper for the starter.
Yeah, it's kind of a hybrid now.
A little bit different, where that guy early in the season was dynamic. He got hurt and came back a little bit. He's kind of the guy that they could use there. But Keller's been a guy who's gone out there and been able to throw strikes at the end of the season. Got into playoffs against the last playoff game and just lost it. So that's how important this game was for him to battle back. Like you said, he struggled. He couldn't throw strikes or anything. Wide at the plate, got a couple of close calls for strikes. But I'll tell you what, when he needed to do it that second inning, I thought the first inning shaky, second inning he was dynamic. He threw the ball very well.
Dodgers are on the board in the third inning, and they take a 1-0 lead on the Phillies. Nola gave him two innings, and now he's the starting pitcher for the Phillies. He's out now. And Toronto tacked on another run, Augie. They lead the Yankees 5-1 in the top of the eighth inning. Had the big lead last night and watched it get erased, so they couldn't clinch last night, but trying to get six more outs and punch their ticket into the American League Championship Series.
We talk about crooked numbers. Well, you watch that game, those games between the Toronto Blue Jays and the Yankees, there's a lot of crooked numbers going up in that game. I wanted to bring something up, Bobby, and you remember the inning where there was, where Durbin got caught in a rundown where they had the bunt. He said it was bunt.
Right, on the Lockridge bunt attempt.
For our fans watching that, when Carson Kelly took that ball and he ran Durbin back to third base, he made a big mistake. He ran him portionately about three quarters of the way back, and then he tossed it to the third baseman. In a case like that, what you're trying to do, if you get a guy in that situation, you can keep the runners at first and second instead of allowing them to go to second, third,
right,
by going as close to the bag, making that short toss, you tag the guy out. Carson Kelly, I thought, threw the ball a little bit early, which caused Durbin to make a really good start and come back to home, made the rundown longer. We ended up with second and third in a great situation of actually take the lead.
Yeah.
So that was a situation for our fans when they see those type of things. A lot of times you want to keep the runners where they're based at first and second, tag to get the guy out at third, and sometimes the runner gets to third. That does happen. But you want to make the least number of throws that you can in a rundown. A good rundown is usually just one throw.
Yeah, Durbin did his part.
He did a great job
in that rundown.
Great job.
Yeah, and the base runners did their part as well to recognize, okay, if this happens, then I'm going to take that extra
absolutely
base. And if not, then I'm just going to stay put. But again, the table was set. They just couldn't get, as Murph said, couldn't get that big hit.
Yeah, you talked the big hits. There's a spot where when that happened, I said, oh, boy, thank you.
Oh, boy.
And then we get a little base hit right there, and then we're right back in it. And we got the ground. They got a ground ball and got him out of it. He got out of it. But those situations, those play big anytime you get that runner in scoring position.
Yeah, when we come back on Brewers Extra Innings, Game 4, it's going to happen now. Who's going to pitch? For the Cubs? For the Brewers? Augie and I are going to kick these ideas around the studio when we return. At Tony Wendorf & Associates, First Weber Group, they do more than close deals. They serve with gratitude and faith-filled purpose. They've sold over $300 million in real estate since 2020, one of the top-ranked real estate teams in Wisconsin. And they're just getting started. What sets them apart? Well, they care. Even if they're not your agent, they'll still help you out. And that's the kind of stewardship the community deserves. If you're buying or selling across Southeast Wisconsin, let them earn your trust. Tony Wendorf will create your red carpet experience. Contact them today at wendorfteam.firstweber.com. Jerry Augustine, Bob Brainerd with you. And Augie, all right, we got a game 4. Here we go. Wrigley Field again tomorrow. Time TBA based on what the Phillies and Dodgers do. So check your local listings, as they say, to see if it starts at 6 or 8 o'clock. That being said, who are the starting pitchers going to be? Because neither Craig Counsell or Pat Murphy, they're playing the little games, Augie. They're, you know, they're not showing their hand. They're not going to say who the star is going to be. They say we don't know yet, but they know. And I think you and I know as well. It's got to be Boyd for the Cubs. It's got to be Freddie Peralta for the Brewers. Talk me out of it if I'm wrong.
I think you're right.
Okay.
I think when you look at the rest, we look at Matthew Boyd really struggled in that first game through just 30 pitches.
Right.
Now he's had time to really go through a regular routine and probably get some extra work in the bullpen.
And regular rest because he pitched on Saturday.
That's
tomorrow's
right.
Thursday, so he
should be ready. Freddie went a little bit deeper in the ballgame, threw a couple more pitches. I would think if they could, they would like to hold off. But I think tomorrow's game is too important. I think Freddie has to be the guy.
Okay, to that, Augie, let's just play the games with the managers here, okay? So let's say you do hold off on Freddie Peralta. Let's say you're like, we love Freddie at home because he's been so good at home, and we would want that guy at home in a game 5 if it would come to that. But if you hold him off, aren't you sending kind of a signal like, all right, we don't expect to win game 4, so we're going to hold our ace for game 5?
I think there's true thinking there. I agree with what you said. It might give that appearance that you're holding off for game 5 and he pitches so well at American Family Field. But you know what? You go to the next playoffs on Monday. So if you pitch him tomorrow, does that mean that you may not have him to start the next playoffs? So I think it's the question that Murph and Jim Henderson and Chris Hook have is, what is the best way to approach the Chicago Cubs? How can we get into a game, get through the game, win the ball game, and really be set for the next set of playoffs? So I think that's where it comes in. Do you want to go with Freddie tomorrow? And if he goes 90 pitches, 95 pitches, technically, which he usually does, boy, he won't be ready for Monday. Now it's going to be game 2 or game 3 or whatever you decide, and you got to find that starter for game 1. I think that's one of the questions. The other question is, you know, if you throw somebody else, does it give you that idea that, hey, you're saying, hey, We may not win tomorrow. We're going to have Freddie for Saturday. Well, you want Freddie for Saturday no matter what, if you win or lose.
Sure.
Hey, you always want Freddie. So it's a tough decision. I think Murph can go a lot of different ways. I think he's still got enough guys in the bullpen that have not thrown a lot that he can still get to him. So I think tomorrow could be interesting. I would not argue with any way he goes because the Brewer pitching has been phenomenal. No matter who they put out there, we all know that Aaron Ashby went out there and he struggled his outing. But I think anybody else they've put out there really has thrown the ball extremely well. Pretty sure had a little bit of problem today, but that does happen. So he's going to sit and try to figure out what is the best route to go. Who can I use? And he could probably go in a bullpen game. And that could be just as good. So it's going to be interesting. And the funny thing is, right when we think who they're going with, they do the exact opposite. Yeah. So, but I think the Brewers, more than the Cubs, have a plethora of pitchers that they can pitch tomorrow rather than what the Cubs have.
So back to your comment that when you said if they decided to, and Augie and I both think it's going to be Freddie Peralta. I think
that's
everybody
right.
in the room thinks it's going to be Freddie. But if for some reason they would decide to try to hold him off for a potential game five, if that would happen, now the question would be, then who's that going to be tomorrow? That question, Augie, is not as easy to answer because, you know, if Woodruff was in the equation, this is a lot easier.
Yes. Oh, but, very much easier.
Right? I mean, setting your rotation. But it can't be Quintana because
He pitched today.
So yeah. I don't know, you know, yes, can the Brewers bullpen it to death again? Absolutely they could. But who's going to start the game? And who pitched today that wouldn't be able to be part of the equation tomorrow? I just don't know if they have enough of a formula that would work to piecemeal it tomorrow rather than just going to Peralta. I just don't see like an easier route to get the job done in game four if you're going that way.
Well, we can go way out and we can put a guy in there that's really pitched well for him at the end of the season. He's only had a couple starts for him, but he gives a different arm angle. He throws the ball a little bit different, and that's Rob Gasser.
Wild card.
Now, that's a wild card shot, but I'm going to tell you what he has done for the ball club. He's kept the team in the ballgame and thrown the ball very well. There's a guy who hasn't pitched yet. So I think the one thing that Murph does when you have your 26-man roster, and you're taking it to the playoffs, you better be ready. I love that manager that says, I don't care if you're number one guy on the roster or 26th guy on the roster, you better be ready and prepared because I am going to use you. So tomorrow is really kind of we'll have people talking during the show and after saying, who are they going to, Gasser, where did he come from? You know, but it's a potential. It's a possibility. He could start the game, go one or two innings. Now we got a bullpen day. And you saw what the bullpen did today. Eight and a third innings, gave up just 5 hits, 2 walks, and 6 strikeouts.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
All the guys didn't throw a lot of pitches. They're low minimum amount of pitches. So you can bring those guys back. Aaron Ashby have another day's rest. They had him warming up in the bullpen today. He's a guy that you can use. But when you look at it, you got Jerry Kinnick, you got Uribe, and you got Trevor Megill that haven't thrown a lot. So it's going to be interesting to see what the Brewers do because if something doesn't go right tomorrow, you have that off day till Saturday.
And then on the other side, again, we assume and we probably think it's going to be Boyd for the Cubs because he's had rest. He's had time to shake off the bad things that happened to him in that early exit in game one against Milwaukee. But it's going to be interesting to see how he can adjust. Can he get back to the way he has been like the ace of their staff at times? Can he get that back pitching in the friendly confines instead? And if he can do that, that helps the Cubs and it helps Craig Counsell to make those pitching decisions a lot easier in game four.
It sure will. And we could, Bobby, even create another mystery. What about starting someone and have
Like
anybody in the bullpen, who threw the ball well.
Couple of former Brewers?
Yeah, you could like former Brewers like Aaron Civale, who threw the ball very well.
There's one.
I think when you look at it, I don't know if you go and pick Colin Ray.
There's another one.
But that's a possibility with an extra day off that he did have. Those guys threw the ball very well. But you could start those guys and piggyback with Matthew Boyd after that.
Yeah.
So the mystery begins. And you know, the one thing that we can talk about this, it's a Brewers Cubs series. It's about the Cubs and the Brewers. But there's another part of this series, this book that I think you might write someday, Murphy versus Council. And the mystery that those guys come up, the ingenuity and the thinking that they have. And we've seen Craig do it, and we've seen Murph do it. So what it's going to be, I'll tell you about. There's going to be a lot of water cooler conversations tomorrow morning. Who is pitching for the Brewers? Because we may not know.
And we probably know. We probably know, but we don't know. Yeah. That's what you're trying to say, Augie.
I think we started a little mystery. We've got fans to say, thinking, boy, what will he do? And fans are going to be in the book and seeing who's the best guy to pitch. But it's going to get interesting. Logically, Matthew Boyd is going to pitch against Freddy Peralta. That's logic.
Logically.
But who's been logical in pitching in baseball today?
It's baseball. Throw logic out the window.
Yeah, you got that right.
When we come back, our play of the game. This was bigger than you might suspect, because at the time, it could have made this a runaway game very early on. Stick around. Brewers Extra Innings rolls on.
Fly ball to right. Back is Frelick. On the warning track, Frelick slides, and he made the catch. Over to third goes Nico Horner, but Sal Frelick sliding and making the play to avoid at least two runs from scoring.
Yeah, easily. And as it was, the Cubs got all four of their runs in that first inning, but Sal Frelick going into that corner, man, if he doesn't get that and the ball pinballs around, it's good night after one, because it could have been a really, really ugly inning. This segment brought to you by Surfside. Our play of the game brought to you by Surfside. Proud partner of the Milwaukee Brewers, Surfside Iced Tea and Vodka and Surfside Lemonade and Vodka, paired perfectly with a day at the ballpark, stocked and cold at American Family Field all season long. Bob Brainerd with you, in for Dom on Brewers Extra Innings, along with former Brewer pitcher Jerry Augustine. Sal's done that all year long. I mean, he's, you know, reckless abandon, right? Doesn't matter if there's a brick wall in the corner or not. He's going to go after it.
I think he is the best right fielder in all of baseball. I don't know if there's anybody that can throw with him to the right base each and every time when there's a decision to make of where do you go with the ball. He always makes sure that he throws the ball at the right base. He goes up reckless abandon. How many balls have we seen him jump up against the wall, make catch, and he might go four rows deep into the stands off the net and try to catch it. It's just the way he plays baseball. He's one of those guys that says, I'm going to give it 100% each and every play, and I don't think there's a better right fielder in all of baseball.
The Cubs came into the series, of course, very good defensive team. Brewers, very good defensive team.
That's right.
No errors in this game tonight, Augie. You love seeing that. Because you love seeing a clean game, because then it's the hitters and the pitchers just deciding it. It's mano a mano. It's not some little miscue. I mean, you had the pop fly, you know, the sun pop fly on the infield that cost the Cubs, but that was Mother Nature just messing with them for a moment. But as far as defenses go, these are two really good defensive teams.
Yeah, they are. And you look at the playoffs that the Cubs had with San Diego, and everybody after the game was saying how did the Cubs win this series? And the big D came up on the board. It was defense.
Yeah,
and a lot of people said it was Swanson himself at shortstop. But both teams are really good defensively. They play very well. They're positioned very well. And the teams that go out and they win and they play well and they're always in a ball game are usually the teams that are not only strong up the middle but are strong totally defensively.
Back in your playing days with the Brewers, to go out there and be a pitcher on the mound and know that you have good defensive players behind you, what does that do to calm a pitcher or to just reassure you that it's like, you know what, if I'm not completely 100% sharp with my pitching, these guys behind me got my back.
Boy, anytime you have Robin Yone at short and Jimmy at short,
right
at second,
there.
I tell you what, you don't worry about ground balls going through. I can remember on a number of occasions, especially with Jimmy more than Robin, because Robin usually doesn't say a whole lot. And I remember coming into a game against California Angels and Reggie was up. And I got him to hit into a double play. And after the game was over, we had won the ball game. And after the game was over, Jimmy came in. We sat out, we went down and had a refreshment after the game. And he said, Augie, he said, when you came in the game, you were facing, and they brought you in to face Reggie Jackson, I knew where I had to play him. And I said, Jimmy, I turned around, I thought that might have gone through, and you're standing right there. It was an easy double play. He said, it's just the knack of we as fielders, good fielders, knowing our pitchers and how they throw the ball, how they're going to get people out, and playing behind your certain pitchers that you do, you really learn how to play defense that way. And you find that back when we played, we didn't have all the positioning that they have now.
Right, and no iPads or
the
charts.
iPads didn't work. Move the guys here. It was just common knowledge of when Pete Vukovic was in the game or anybody else, Mike Caldwell was in the game, you're going to get a lot of ground balls. You're going to get a ground ball hit the opposite way, where to play them. Those guys really studied and they understood it. And I thought Jimmy Gantner was so good at it because I used to smile because he said, "Don't worry, just throw it, let her hit it at me, I'll get him out." And he did. And he was one of, you know, you take a Jim Gantner, now you got a Bryce Terang. I'll tell you what, in franchise history, I couldn't think of two better second basemen that you can have in the game of baseball.
Jimmy, the pride of Eden, Wisconsin.
Jimmy Gander, UW the best Oshkosh, in all the world.
And UW Oshkosh Titans standout.
You got that right.
As well. Shout out, Hail Titans. When we come back, we're going to wrap up this edition of Brewers Extra Innings. We're going to flush Game 3 and get you ready for Game 4. Stick around. Out West, Phillies have grabbed the lead on the Dodgers 3-1. Kyle Schwarber hit one out of Chavez Ravine, like literally. Crazy long. And the Blue Jays are up 5-1 on the Yankees, top of the ninth inning, trying to wrap up that series on the American League side. Bob Brainerd, Jerry Augustine with you on Brewers Extra Innings. All right, Augie, we broke down the potential and the probable pitching matchups for game number 4. You got more?
I got, during the commercial, I got a text from Kenny Sanders, the Bulldog.
The Bulldog.
And he says, if you burn Peralta tomorrow, you go into the championship game without your best pitcher. You guys have been interesting. Keep it up.
We're always interesting, Kenny. Always, never a question if we're interesting or not. Well, yes. I mean, that's the big if.
It's a question.
Yeah.
But, it really is.
But you also have to look at it from the side of you want your best guy out there to try to get this series over with in 4, right?
That's right. It is a tough decision. And with Murph and Jim Henderson and Chris Hook, you have to really sit and think, what can you do to get through tomorrow's ball game? And I think the one thing that you look at, this Brewer pitching staff is really good. They're good from top to bottom, and they're creative, or they can use them in multi ways. And it's been proving that when you take some of the pitchers that they have, you take a guy like Chad Patrick, who's been a starter most of the year, and all of a sudden you bring him in. He was dynamic tonight. He was dynamic the other night when he came in. And you take a guy like Miz, who everybody says, "Well, why do you pick Miz?" But Miz stepped up to the occasion.
He did.
So you know, you take these guys who are throwing the ball really well. You have their veterans that you have with McGill, Uribe, and Koenig, and Mears, and Ashby, and Grant Anderson. But then you add the other guys in with Mizorowski, Glasser, and Patrick. That's a pretty good staff.
All right. He's Jerry Augustine, former Brewer pitcher. He'll be back tomorrow. It might be me with you. It might be Dom. If the Dodgers win, if the Phillies win, then you're stuck with me again. And if the Phillies win, ball game at Wrigley Field will start at 8:08 for the first pitch. So the pregame would begin at 7:30. If the Dodgers win, that series is over. Then they're going to move up the Brewers and Cubs to be a 6:08 first pitch start. And then the pregame here on 620 WTMJ would start at 5:30. Got all that?
I got it.
Dang, you got it. For Jerry Augustine, for Matt Yazel, who's pressing all the right buttons, Bob Brainerd, you've been listening to Brewers Extra Innings. We'll talk to you tomorrow for Game 4 between the Brewers and the Cubs. Good night, Wisconsin.